equal time. Another viewpoint, other considerations. Equal time.
Good afternoon. I'm Carl Ettinger. Welcome to Equal Time. My theme, as usual, is energy, food, and the local economy after the age of oil. If you're interested in following more on this subject, I've got a blog. It's called Relocalizing Vermont. It's at vtcommons.org. That's the Vermont Commons website, vtcommons.org. Click on the blog link or type /blog after vtcommons.org. We've got a great show coming up today. We've got a continuing series of interviews with other radio hosts from around the continent whose shows have a similar theme, energy, food, and the local economy at the end of the age of oil. The guest today will be Michael Olson. He's host of The Food Chain, also known as What's Eating What Radio, which is a California-based show, comes out every week about where our food comes from. Also, in the last half of the show, be talking with Fernando Pajes. He is the author of two books on affordable building and remodeling. Pajes is the keynote speaker in the Building Better by Design conference, taking place next week in Burlington. It's Wednesday and Thursday of next week, and he'll be talking about high-quality, low-cost, green-built homes. Our numbers, as usual, are 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. Before we get into that, I just want to begin by asking a question you don't hear too often. How are the stations of WDEV, Radio Free Vermont, like Al Jazeera TV? Okay, there are some real differences. Al Jazeera is a state-owned television network. It's based in Qatar. WDEV is a privately owned radio mini-network. It's based in Waterbury, Vermont. George Bush discussed bombing Al Jazeera, and as far as I know, he hasn't discussed bombing WDEV. But here's what I see as some important similarities. First, both Al Jazeera and WDEV offer a wide range of views and opinions. At WDEV, if you don't hear something you disagree with pretty strongly, you probably aren't listening very carefully. At WDEV, we delight every Vermonter. We also dismay every Vermonter from time to time, I expect. Those of us on the air, we often disagree with each other. You just have to listen to Ken Squire and Jack Donovan do the 1215 Sportcast to know that. And Al Jazeera, it's raised tremendous controversy within the Arab world, where it provides different views than the state-run media. It even aired over 700 hours of speeches by George W. Bush, which surely didn't go over well in many Arab capitals. And in the U.S., it's been a favorite punching bag of people who don't like some of the things it's reported. WDEV also covers stories you don't hear elsewhere. I'm not just talking about live broadcasts from Norwich University hockey or high school basketball. I'm not even just talking about Mark Johnson's roaming microphone, though how many other stations were broadcasting from the Vermont Tiger Symposium today, or broadcast from the State House for 2 hours every week the legislature is there. I'm thinking about WDEV's commitment to getting people out on the street and covering important breaking stories, like during the 1993 flood, when the station sent its workers out into the field to monitor river conditions and kept in close touch with area businesses that had a good view of the river. Apparently, Howard Dean, governor at the time, said he kept track of conditions by listening to WDEV. And here comes the hook to today's news. Al Jazeera did something like that during the recent Israeli offensive in Gaza. The AP reported that Al Jazeera was the only TV source with reporters inside of Gaza during the offensive. If you wanted to see pictures and get firsthand reports of what was happening there, Al Jazeera was apparently the TV channel to go to. Because Al Jazeera had reporters on the ground where the other TV stations didn't, their viewership in the U.S. went up 600%, according to the same AP article. Well, how did people watch it? Remember that controversy last year over Burlington Telecom offering Al Jazeera? Ken Picard reported then that Burlington Telecom was one of two cable stations in the entire country offering Al Jazeera. Two. Well, it turns out that Al Jazeera streams online and that almost all the U.S. attention came via the Internet. I'm glad that Burlington Telecom makes a wide range of news sources, including Al Jazeera, available to people who want them. I don't watch the station. I don't even have cable TV. But I'm glad that when people who want it have the freedom to watch it. And I'm also intrigued that the Internet has allowed so many people in the country elsewhere to get around local censorship of Al Jazeera. It reminds me of the drunken generals who staged the coup in the Soviet Union in 1991. Remember when Boris Yeltsin defied them from atop a tank in Red Square? The generals, they'd try to cut off communications that they didn't control. but fax machines and computer networks, plus some radio stations, allowed news to be spread, and Yeltsin's act of resistance was duplicated around the country. Now, some people don't want you to have access to perspectives they disagree with. The internet makes that more difficult than ever. Folk singer Tom Paxton understood this dynamic. Here's his take on it.
A thought was born in the mind of a man, and it didn't please you, and it didn't please me. Not only did this troublesome thought prevail, but worst of all, one thought bred more.
That was Tom Paxton. The thought stayed free. On to our first guest today. I've been doing a series of interviews with people around the continent with radio shows with similar themes to mine here every Monday on Equal Time. And I've talked with the hosts of Deconstructing Dinner and The Reality Report. Both of these shows have been around a few years, just a little longer than I've been on the radio. Today, we're going to talk with someone who may well be the granddaddy of local food radio, Michael Olson. Olson hosts a weekly radio show out of Southern California called The Food Chain. And he's produced over 620 segments of the weekly show. Well, if I do my division, that's 12 years of production, assuming a new show every week. Olson is also the author of Metro Farm, a thick book on how to make a living raising food on a small plot of land. Mike Olson, welcome to Equal Time.
Carl, thank you so much for having me aboard today. But I got to tell you, just the thought of hanging around listening to Tom Paxton sing in a snow-covered Vermont is really relaxing. I got to tell you, it's just a great feeling just to even imagine that.
Yeah, well, thanks for that. The view out your window must be rather sun-drenched now.
Oh, yeah, we've had way too much sun here lately. I'm actually in Central California, right on the top of the Monterey Bay area.
Ah, okay, thanks for that.
And it's really a beautiful area, and the weather's been actually quite beautiful, but I had an ag economist from University of California, Davis, on the radio this morning, talking a little bit about the impact of all this good weather. We are now going to get almost no water from the federal water system that courses through the California's Great Central Valley. So he estimates that this year California is going to lose $2.5 billion in crops and 40,000 jobs because of the nice weather that we're having.
So is that because a snowpack is not building up in the Sierras?
That's correct.
Okay.
There's snow. We've had very little rain this year, very little snow. Mm. And when you have no water, you have no agriculture.
Right.
And there it goes.
Well, it's just like you to be thinking one step ahead from the beautiful weather outside your home to what that's going to do to our food supply.
Yeah.
And our food supply, California's food production is our food supply out here in Vermont too.
That's right.
It's a
long food
transport chain from there. But why don't you begin by telling us what the Food Chain Radio Show is all about and what you consider your mission to be?
Sure. Let me tell you. I started doing the Food Chain Radio program. I picked it up from the local Farm Bureau that had a radio show on called Saturday Morning Agriculture, and they talked about agriculture, from agriculturists to agriculturists. They're talking about agriculture, with farmers. And when I picked up the radio show, I did it because I had come out with Metro Farm, and I thought, I worked for David Brinkley for 8 years doing television magazine pieces for NBC Television.
Did you?
And I thought, I'm going to do talk radio a little bit differently. I'm going to do it like as if I were producing a television show. Mm. Producing a television show, you go out and find a good story, and then you capture that story. But with radio, you put the show on the air, and then you open it up for people to talk. They can call in. So radio, news talk radio is really the media that talks with people instead of at them. So I can put a story on the show, on the air, and then people call in, just like you, and then we have a conversation going. So it really, to me, radio is just so much more beautiful than television, because television just over-describes everything. It leaves nothing to the imagination, whereas radio is all imagination and conversation. Mm-hmm. I just fell in love with news talk radio. So I started doing Saturday Morning Agriculture, and people would come up to me and they'd say, Olson, I love your radio show, but I don't have anything to do with agriculture, which, of course, is the most absurd thing they ever for anyone to ever say, because we all live on agriculture. Agriculture, without food, you know, there's no people. So
that bumper sticker out here, don't complain about farmers with your mouth full.
Amen. So I changed the name to the Food Chain Radio Program. And that way, everybody's involved. You know, it's What's Eating What Radio. So it's eat or be eaten, one of the two.
Mm.
And so it also allowed me much more freedom in selecting topics. And, you know, when you produce 622 radio shows, and every one of them are different, you know, you have to kind of have a broad outlook on the world, I guess.
Right. Now who is your audience? Your website says that it's broadcast live via the Star Guide G8.
Yeah, it's on satellite. It's
okay.
Syndicated around the country on News Talk radio stations, so radio stations around the country can pick it up off the satellite. It's also archived on the on my metrofarm.com website, so there are probably 100 radio shows that people can listen to on a tremendous variety of subjects. So with the internet, I really realized that, you know, one person could develop a program that could be heard around the world via the internet. You know, people could listen to me in Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego.
Mm.
And so I started thinking, well, that makes it worthwhile to produce a good show, because then people can listen to you everywhere.
And you bring in guests who have a broad variety of perspectives and are distributed all over this country, at least, maybe
in other countries
as well.
So, you know, this past Saturday, I had Wendell Berry and Wes Jackson on the radio, and we had a wonderful conversation and lots of give and take. And you can afford to spend the time producing good shows when you can reach an audience that goes around the world.
Mm.
And that's really what the internet has done to radio. You know, you can take a radio station like I am here in Santa Cruz, California, and we have 10,000 watts. You know, it's a big booming signal. But with the internet, you know, that signal can you can be heard everywhere. So it made it worth my while to invest a lot of time and effort into building good shows.
Hmm. Which is a good time to remind listeners that this show and others from Equal Time are available on our website, www.equaltimeradio.com. And metrofarm.com is Michael Olson's website, where you can pick up his show, The Food Chain.
That's right. So you got the idea, too. You know, you have the capability of serving an audience throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of how the program began, and I just really enjoy doing it. You know, I enjoy hosting interesting people, and I enjoy interesting subjects. So Saturday morning, we just... away we go.
Well, talking about you know, affording to put the effort in to produce a good show, then the question you ask almost all your guests or all your guests is, you know, who pays your freight? So let me turn that around and ask you, who pays for the food chain?
Very good. Well, my day job is I'm a general manager of two radio stations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I earn money there, and I also have a couple of sidelines, like I write books.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring an income in as well as does the radio show. So a little bit here, a little bit there.
Mm-hmm. You know. Sounds like a lot of it is donated by you, time donated by you.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
For which I am compensated. But yes, you know, you bet it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much the way of all labors of love, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. It often is, yeah. And I appreciate being able to download your podcast for free. That's the way I listen to it, via the web. Well, how do you locate your guests? You get some of the most fascinating people in, and I've cribbed at least one guest from you. I heard
good for you.
Jeff Gilman, the author of The Truth About Organic Farming. I listened
mm-hmm.
to him on your show, and I brought him onto the show a couple months later.
Well, good for you.
It was a good find.
Well, you know, first of all, let me say that I was trained at story building, story crafting by David Brinkley at NBC Television. So when I worked for him as a young man, I was a stringer. So essentially, that meant that if I found a story he liked, I got paid, and if I found a story he didn't like, I wouldn't get paid. So, you kind of learn quickly that when you're compensated that way, on what kinds of shows might work and which ones don't.
You get interesting or you get out.
Yes, that's exactly right. So So the first thing you learn is that you have to be entertaining. You know, you really do have to entertain an audience. Otherwise, they kill you in a matter of seconds just by pushing the button and you're gone.
Mm.
So you have to be entertaining. That was what my first lesson was. And then you have to provide information of value. You know, so, and that's the, you know, kind of the meat and potatoes. So first you're in entertaining, and then you're informative. And above all, it's important for you as host to have fun. And if you do, you know, chances are your audience will as well. So given that, how do I find my shows? I now get people, a lot of people after 622 shows, you know, a lot of people submit things to me all the time. But in essence now, I think of myself as a big fat trout laying in the bottom of a stream watching the bugs float past. And I like the big, take the big fat ones and eat them. And that's how I find my stories.
Well, there's a lot of bugs floating past in the information highway, aren't there?
Well, there certainly are. You know, there certainly are. And it's just having a sense of which ones are will be interesting and which ones won't.
We're talking to Michael Olson. He's the host of The Food Chain, a weekly radio show out of Central California.
Santa Cruz, California is the home port.
Okay, thank you. If you want to talk to Michael about his show, 244-1777 is a local number, toll-free, 877-291-8255. Well, you did a show a few weeks ago of Vermont. Well, it's national interest, really, but it sort of originated in Vermont. I'm talking about the two guys traveling around the country on this bus topsy-turvy.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to promote the White House Garden, and they started their trip in Vermont with a bus furnished to them by Ben Cohen.
Mm-hmm, Ben and Jerry's, that's right. So and they put it in organic. I love the idea, you know. One of them was a marketing person, and you can tell the influence of the marketing person. You know, they took Ben and Ben Cohen's bus, and they, which is called Topsy Turvy. It was a one bus welded on top of the other bus, roof to roof, and so they modified it and they planted a garden in the roof of this top bus, and they drove around the country promoting that the next president. I'm not even sure they knew who it was going to be at the time, but the next president would plant an organic garden in the White House lawn, on the White House lawn. A wonderful idea, and a real fun time was had by all as they traveled around the country, meeting famous people and pitching this wonderful idea. And it is a wonderful idea when it gets right down to it, you know, to have a real garden in the White House lawn.
The idea being going back to World War II, World War I, when there were gardens in the White House lawn, and even earlier than that. And
well,
showing that
to the earliest president, the first president, John Adams, a New Englander, who was the first resident of the White House, and as a gentleman farmer of New England, well, of course you plant a garden here. So what else are you going to eat, right?
Right.
So, and, you know, when it gets right down to it, that's really the subject of the show. The underlying theme of everything is our food chain. And in doing shows over 622 different shows in authoring Metro Farm, I come to recognize that there are a lot of change going on constantly, but there are three things that I have isolated that I think are truisms that are always true. I'd like to try them out on you and see what you think, if I might.
The three laws of the food chain?
Yes, Michael Olson's three laws of the food chain.
Okay, let's hear them.
Okay, law number one. Agriculture is the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles. No agriculture, no sandcastles. Does that make sense to you?
Sandcastles being everything else we do in our lives?
Being our culture, our society, all of our institutions, our buildings, everything. Because without a surplus of food, we could not have any of those things.
That's right.
Without a surplus of food, we will be reduced to being uncivilized humans.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So it's important for we city people to remember that because it's so easy for us to forget. You know, we sometimes think that agriculture is something that takes place in the back rooms of supermarkets, but that's really not the case.
Or that farmers comprise a tiny percentage of the population, you know, 2% or so, a small percentage as farmers of the gross domestic product, the GDP, and therefore it's not all that important.
That's right.
But you're right, it's the foundation of everything else.
It's the foundation of everything. So it's really important to hold that thought in our minds as we go about our decision-making processes. Michael Olson's law of the food chain number two, the farther we go from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in that food.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Of particular significance these days because we have grown so far from the source of our food. We're buying food now from, my goodness, we're buying baby food, baby formula that has melamine in it from China.
We're buying peanut paste from Georgia that has salmonella in it.
And on and on and on and on and on. Now, the significance of this observation, the farther we are from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in that food. Now, that has a huge impact on how we govern our food chain. Because we have to protect ourselves from melamine from China or, you know, toxic peanut butter from Georgia or what have you, we pass laws and we enforce laws on, and we make these giant food processing institutions comply with these complicated rules and regulations. Sometimes they work, you know, but sometimes they don't, as is witnessed the case with the Georgia peanut factory and the melamine from China and on and on and on. But what really happens is that we take those laws that were designed to govern food that comes from many thousands of miles away, because you and I have no control over that food. We rely on government and laws to protect us. And we take those laws and we apply them to the farmers down the road with whom we buy food directly from.
Is that the third law?
No.
No, okay.
But
okay, that's a consequence of the second law.
Yes.
And you had a pretty good show about that a little over a month ago, I think, about us started out with a scenario, the true story of a SWAT team that held an Ohio farm family hostage while they searched for evidence of what?
Selling food directly to people.
Yeah, horrible.
Farmers were selling food to people. Oh, my God. Mm. So, and without complying with these industrial rules and regulations. Mm. So I have a good friend down in the Shenandoah River Valley of Virginia, Joel Salatin by name, who suggests that we get rid of all laws pertaining to the direct sale of food from farmer to consumer.
Everything I Want to Do is Illegal is his latest book.
Yes, that's right.
He was here in Vermont, sponsored by Rural Vermont last year.
Yes, that's Joel. So what Joel suggests is that direct sales is self-regulating. If I were a farmer and sold you my rutabagas, and you went home and got food poisoning from eating my rutabagas, who would be in trouble? Me, because you know where I live.
And so I know other people who buy from you.
Yes, in that regard, direct sales regulates itself. Mm-hmm. You don't need those giant rules and regulations, okay? So that's just a derivative of the second law of the food chain, which is to say, the farther you go from the source of your food, the less control you have over what's in that food.
Now, the direct sales that we have here in Vermont, the farmers markets with relatively small farms,
mm-hmm.
and one or a family of farmers that are responsible for them, out there in California, you have 100,000-acre farms. You think the same thing should apply to direct sales off the farm stand for them?
Well, if you buy food directly from them, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're selling food to you in Vermont, you're a long ways from the source of that food, so you need to be protected.
So for the tiny percentage of their customer base who would buy directly from the farm, then no laws need apply. But for us who are buying it through the food chain here in Vermont,
exactly. You need to be protected. So there should be rules for that and laws for that. So, and incidentally, there are those 2,000-acre farms. There are also very small farmers who sell direct at the farmer's market, which is where I buy a substantial amount of my food. Mm-hmm. So the third law of the food chain, the third and final law, cheap food isn't.
Cheap food isn't.
That's right.
Isn't cheap, in other words.
It isn't cheap. There are hidden costs there that mostly are paid by taxpayers in the forms of huge subsidies and protections. And if you look at cheap food and really do a true cost accounting for the true cost of production, you'll find that cheap food is actually very expensive for what you find inside it, the nutrients that you find inside of that cheap food.
Hmm. And the subsidies aren't going to the farmers who sell at the local farmers market here, by and large.
No, they aren't, are they? Yeah.
Hmm.
They're going to huge, giant operations.
Hmm. Well,
so those are the three rules that I've come up with over the course of my my time in on the Food Chain Radio program.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're almost out of time here, but you have written this wonderful book called Metro Farm, which tells how to make a living working on a small plot of land.
Let me give you a quick thumbnail.
And I want to teaser that because I want you to come back and tell us about it when you get the second edition out.
I would be happy to. I would be happy to. The Guide to Growing for Big Profit on a Small Parcel of Land. And you can make a lot of money on a small parcel of land. One of the people I feature in Metro Farm, made over $2 million on a half an acre of land. And when I come back, I'll tell you all about that.
Half an acre of land in a pretty urban area.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's where, why? Because that's where the money's at.
Mm. So we have here in Vermont a group that's been inspired by the national push to get a garden or a small farm on the White House lawn. We want our state house lawn to have a small garden on it, and I imagine there are stories like that all over the country. But it's all ties into the Metro Farm concept of growing food in small plots of land and making a go at it financially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and If you think about it, it's probably the food chain, as I say, you know, agriculture is the foundation upon which we build all our food, all of our sandcastles. And we love our sandcastles, but if they're all made possible by that surplus of food and fiber from agriculture.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So, you know, when you see that neighborhood farmer making dust and dirties and smelling kind of funny and have an inkling to chase him out of the neighborhood for something that's clean and unproductive, you have to remember that those people are really, you know, making possible everything that we have.
Hmm. Well, Michael Olson, it's been great talking to you. And why don't you tell us your website one more time?
Sure, metrofarm.com. And I know it's kind of funny to put those two words together, metropolitan and farm. But if you put them together, you get Metro Farm. And my job in the world, my jihad, if you will, is to bring agriculture back to the cities and to bring people back into agriculture.
Okay.
And I think that is what we need, just like those folks who are trying to plant a garden in the White House lawn.
Michael, would you stick on the line for just a minute as
sure.
we go into commercial break? Okay.
Sure.
We're going to come back and we're going to talk, I hope, with Fernando Pajes. He is the author of two books on affordable building and remodeling. He's going to be a speaker in Burlington next week at the Building Better by Design conference on the topic high quality, low cost, green built homes. So stay tuned. We'll be back after this.